This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Phoenix, Arizona. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 8th, episode 1626, brought to you today by our friends at Equestrian Collections. Good morning, Horse World.
Guess what day it is, huh? Anybody?
Julie, hey, guess what day it is?
Oh, come on. I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Wednesday.
That's right, it's hump day with your Horses in the Morning hosts, Jamie, that girl Jennings, and Glenn, the geeky pony guy. Wednesday, I can't
sleep. It gets me every time. Happy Wednesday, everybody. How are you, Glenn? Jennifer,
good.
You guys good?
Yes, we survived the storms last night, although it wasn't as bad here as it was in like Louisiana. Thinking about all those people over there, but yeah, we're doing fine. It rained and it hasn't done that in a while, so that's good.
You had storms. I had wildlife. I was driving home from Chad that plays on a men's softball league, which pretty much means he cripples himself every Tuesday night. And we're driving home and it's probably about 8 o'clock. So it's dark. And I'm driving down the road and I had to slam on the brakes. Lucas is in the back. He's like, what'd you do that for, mommy? I'm like, look, there's a coyote. And it was right in front of my car. And Chad was behind me. So we both turned our brights on and like, watch it saunter across the road. And this is where all the farm fields are that I ride in. So I thought, oh, that's cool. It's like out in the farm fields. Good luck, buddy. You know, and I drive on home. And then last night at about 4, that dude and all his buddies were outside my house. Like, I mean, you know it's bad when your dogs are in the house and start barking. I was like,
the chicken bar was open. The word went out. There was an email went out. Hey, chickens at Jamie's house.
Well, you know what? I just want to go talk to my rooster because I'm like, dude, you're blowing your cover. When the rooster hears all of the coyotes, he starts crowing like mad.
He's protecting his hens. He's acting tough.
He thinks he is, but we are leading him right to you. Shh, be quiet.
Is the chicken house pretty secure now? Have you had any chicken theft lately?
So I bought these beautiful silky hens. I bought two of them. They were about 6 weeks old and they've grown up now. I've had them for a couple months and I finally released them to be free range. And the freaking neighbor's dog came over. Oh, he was just licking them. It died. Your dog was not just licking my chicken. It died. So
scared of, or died of fright. One or the other, which they can't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So SpongeBob SquarePants went on over the Rainbow Bridge and somebody is very upset that he can't find SpongeBob SquarePants. So
I was afraid you were going to say it was Monty Roberts because I noticed a video the other day where he has named one of the chickens Monty Roberts.
Yes, yeah, so Monty Roberts lives on. So we have Monty Roberts and
Monty
now
would be unhappy to hear that he's no longer with us. So
yes, no, I was pretty happy that it wasn't Monty Roberts that
okay, everybody, what we're talking about is her son is what, 3 or 4?
He's 3, three and a half. And we have this Lucas painting of this cowboy in the house. I did not name Monty Roberts. So we have these silky chickens and two of them and had two of them. And he wanted to name it Cowboy. And one of my students was like, oh, like Monty Roberts? And now he calls it Monty Roberts. And it was SpongeBob SquarePants and Monty Roberts. And so I videoed him talking and I sent it to Debbie, like, my child has become obsessed with your dad too. And so, just so you know, I went, I was like, I have to replace SpongeBob SquarePants. Obviously can't just have one silky, but they're beautiful and they're sweet. And so, the guy would only sell me two together.
So
now we have, Now we have two tiny baby chicks that are like 4 days old. I'll post pictures of them later. They're so cute.
Well, that's one thing. Nice thing about three-year-olds is you can trick them into focusing on something else.
Exactly. So
now he's forgotten about SpongeBob and he's onto the two new ones.
No, the two new ones now are, he's like, oh, okay. Because I was like, here's SpongeBob. And he's 3 and a half. So he's like, oh, okay. And he goes, and then that's Patrick. So now we have SpongeBob, Patrick, and Monty Roberts.
No better way to learn about the cycle of life than owning chickens, which seems to die on a regular basis.
So, we have Crazy Toe out back, and we've had Crazy Toe for like 8 years. We're on Crazy Toe 17 now, but he doesn't need to know that. It's just a black chicken. All right, Jennifer, save us. What's coming up on today's show? I could bore you guys for hours about chickens.
I think we could do a chicken. Honestly, think we could do a chicken show on the network, and it'd probably be our most popular. Our listeners chicken round are table. Into chickens. They really are into chickens. Sorry, Jennifer, go ahead.
Coming up on today's Equestrian Collections, Too Wacky for Wednesday edition, with our apologies to those who are eating breakfast during the show. The Stud Crud Buster is here to talk about, well, sort of obvious ones he's going to talk about, isn't it? And then Wieners. Next up, the ND Flax Milling Horse Health Report features Dr. Frazier, yay, one of our favorites, from Haggard Equine, and she has the basics of foal care. And then raking up the leavings, Pat Goodwin from Tractor Tools Direct has haymaking machines for dummies. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you. It's going to be educational today.
Yeah, very educational. Have you looked up every synonym for wieners that you can find and you're going to use them today?
I was way too
excited about this guest, is just what I'm saying.
I am excited to talk to somebody else about sheath cleaning, okay? So we'll go get there when we get there. We have a sheath cleaning discussion, and my main goal of this whole interview is to get you to say the word penis. It's got to happen.
My new favorite expression is winky. I've been going winky. With winky lately. I don't know why.
We're gonna be educational, and we have to educate the masses, Glenn. And you have
pride.
To use proper
I take
terms.
Pride in the fact that I know that this morning on radio stations across the world, on really big radio stations, on really big shows, even Howard Stern is not talking about sheath cleaning this morning. I take pride in it.
He may mention penis though, so
that'll be mentioned guaranteed. Probably not a lot about cleaning them. All right. I have a listener daily, Winnie, and this is from the Kayla Muller. Kayla, yesterday ran into somebody in the wild, and her name is Charlotte Merrill Smith, and she's a para rider from here in Ocala. She used to be an eventer and had an accident and is now a para rider. And she was chatting apparently with Charlotte. Kayla was chatting with Charlotte, and Charlotte was like, "Are you the Kayla?" Because she listens to our shows on a regular basis.
Aww.
So Kayla was like, "I'm not the Kayla, I'm just Kayla." She said, "No, you're the Kayla." So yes, Kayla, you are the Kayla. So we're going to go with that because I kind of like it. And then we want to give the Daily Winnie to Charlotte. And thank you so much. I ended up chatting with her a little bit on Facebook last night. She's going to come over and sit in on one of our shows here one of these days. Meet Scooter. And she's been listening for a long time. So you get the Daily Winnie. Daily Winnie, Charlotte. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it.
My Daily Winnie. Oh, gosh, I had to pick, but this was just too good of a story. Hold on, I got to find it on my darn computer. Let's see. First of all, I wanted to point out that I'm really excited that the Pollock Report is going to come and be on a show on our network.
By the way, let me just add, that starts Friday. First episode comes out on Friday.
Okay, cool. So the Pollock Report is he's Ray Pollock. I mean, he's like the god of racing news. He has the PollockReport.com. Very legitimate. We're going to have like a legitimate show on here. I mean, we have some amazing people. We have Grand Prix dressage riders hosting that show. We have unbelievable eventers hosting that show. We have, help me out, we have Debbie, Monty Roberts' daughter hosting that show. Like, can't get more legitimate than that. We have a horse trainer, a jumper rider, Grand Prix jumper rider doing the jumper show. We've got Mary Kitzmiller. She's like the colt starting goddess.
CHA, the Certified Horsemanship Association. CHA,
I mean, it goes on and on and on.
All these great people.
And then we've got Ray Pollock coming on to host a show. I don't know why you hired me. Like, out of all of this,
or
like,
kind of look at it, I'm the least qualified of everybody. You're even more qualified than me. So I'm kind of
what the hell are we doing here?
I don't know. I don't know why you and I are on this network. We've outclassed ourselves. That's what happened. Yeah.
You got to have like people to lift you up, you know, like bring you up in the world. So that's what we're doing. And so this is the quality news that you can find on the Pollock Report. And then my Daily Whinny goes out to a horse and her name. Well, her name was, but it has been changed. Once a thoroughbred horse races, it's almost impossible to change the name. But a three-year-old filly by Awesome Gambler debuted at Santa Anita Park on January 15th. And she will be racing as a new name. And her new name is Ellie Mae. And she'll be racing at Santa Anita on Saturday. Well, they changed her original name. And her original name was Ellie Von Stupp. And if you remember who the Von Stupps are, that's because she was the, like, German seductress in Blazing Saddles.
Oh, yes.
Lily von Stupp.
Oh, yes. Okay. Now
Madeline Kahn. Yeah.
Madeline Kahn, who won an Academy Award nomination for supporting actress because of playing Ellie von Stupp. Well, apparently, somebody found the name von Stupp a little objectionable. And so they went to the jockey club and complained. And so, of course, Ray Pollock went to his senior Hebrew correspondent and said, why would people be upset about von Stupp? And apparently, Stupp is the Yiddish term for the F word.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. So this horse went out as this name, Ellie von Evan. Somebody was like, hey, that's not appropriate.
Well, I would have loved to hear Larry Kalmus call von Stupp, you know, coming across the finish line. I would have loved to hear that.
Apparently, the announcer had a whole lot of fun. And I hope that Ray tells this story. Apparently, in the movie Blazing Saddles, she says, hello, handsome. Is that a 10-gallon hat or are you just enjoying the show? And as the horse is being loaded into the starting gate, the announcer goes, it's a pity the starter is not wearing a 10-gallon hat. And then the whole song she sings is, I'm tired of playing a game, made it a crying shame, I'm so tired. And of course, she's going around the final stretch. And Ellie von Stupp drops out last. She looks tired. So tired.
God, that makes me want to go watch that movie again.
I know. Well, I love that movie. And
That's one of those movies, as you're flipping around and you come across it, you just stay. You just watch it again, you know.
You have to. Yeah. You have to, and you know, it's a classic for sure. So anyway, apparently somebody was not happy. So this is the Pollock Report news, late breaking news that you're going to get here on the show, and I hope he tells that story better than I did.
Great story. Well, I want to also welcome some new sponsors. We're getting a whole bunch of new sponsors to the network here, thanks to my last trip to Ada. And we want to welcome Horse Lovers and Equestrian Collections are taking over the title sponsor spot here on Horses in the Morning on Wednesdays. So we'll be hearing all about them on Wednesdays, and we welcome them to the group. We really appreciate their support over the last couple of years on various shows, Stable Scoop and others. I do have to mention, too, that Horse Lovers has agreed to do another round of product testing by auditors. So what happened last year was they sent out 50 products with the assistance of manufacturers for auditors to test and then come on the Stable Scoop show and do reviews of. And we did 50, I think it was 50 product reviews last year. And these auditors got some really nice stuff. There were $400 pairs of boots, blankets, you know, everything from $10 to $500 in value. And they got to keep it. So they just sent it out and you got to keep it. If you are not an auditor and want to have the opportunity or the chance to get to review some products, and we're coming up with a fun way to dole them out this year. If you want to have that opportunity and chance to do that on the air and to get free stuff, then head on over to horsesinthemorning.com. There's a banner on the left side for becoming an auditor. Click on that. For as little as $1 a month, you could become an auditor. But now's the time. Get it done in the next 2 days, or you might not be eligible to get one of the products this year. Let me tell you, some of those auditors got a product that was worth enough that they paid for their auditorship for the next 30 years. So if you're not an auditor yet and you've been thinking about it, now is the time. Do it today. Go do it right now. We want to welcome them, EquestrianCollections.com and HorseLovers.com. And we'll be talking a lot more about them as the weeks unfold. Now, also, it's going around again, Jamie, and we covered this once when it was going around last year. The headline is that the BLM is going to kill 44,000 wild horses. You remember that one. We talked about it before. If you just go to Snopes, you will find out that is false. There was a recommendation by an advisory committee, not the BLM, but an advisory committee to kill the 44,000 horses that are in holding pens. And the BLM, you know, to their credit, you know, we like to peek on BLM, but you know what? When they do something right, we have to credit them too. The BLM immediately said, no, we're not doing that. So they posted notices on their website.
The rain of hell that would have, yes, like fallen down. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Well, just the announcement that the advisory committee had recommended it got to be false news. This is the epitome of false news right here.
It's not happening. No. Now, let me go ahead and say that the BLM, when a horse is not adopted three times, they can then be sold. So, you know, you going to these adoptions and all those things are not possible for a lot of people. So nobody really thinks about it. So nobody goes, and then all these horses are getting not adopted because they are doing internet adoptions. An internet adoption is considered an adoption. And it can be if a horse is passed over three times, it can then be sold. Now, I want to let everybody know right now, blm.gov/adopt-a-horse. Go to it. If you've ever wanted a Mustang, right now there is an adoption going on. And the adoption ends on February 14th on Valentine's Day. So get your sweetie that dream paint. Get your sweetie that little buckskin colt. Get your sweetie a little chestnut with a star, you know, something. Go to blm.gov right now, adopt-a-horse/adopt-a-horse. And there's an internet adoption going on. You have to fill out an application. There's a bidding. So I went on and I found one, and they have videos of all of them. They've really gotten good at this, actually. There's photos, there's videos, there's descriptions of all the horses. You can kill nine hours.
Long way from 20 years ago when you had to go and just point to one in a pen.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. And some of them have pretty good description. Like this one's quite friendly, or this one is wild. And there's pregnant ones. I mean, that's where Zeus came from, was a pregnant mama captured. You can go on, you can look at them and you can adopt. I fortunately went on and I saw one that I was like, I have to have this horse. I was watching, it's like a 25 minute video of all the horses just running through in these different locations. And I was like, I need this horse. And then I went on and it was not on the list. So there's horses that are on the videos that aren't actually adoptable anymore. Somebody had already adopted it and I wanted to cry. Chad was so happy. He was like, wait, you did what? I'm like, it doesn't matter. It's already gone. He's like, well, that's good. I'm like, no, it's good, but it's not good. I don't know. But there, oh my gosh, I found a little bull that, like a little weanling that's like Hidalgo with two blue eyes, and the bidding's already up to $500. So most of them are adoptable at $125. So blm.gov/adopt-a-horse. go check it out. If you want that Mustang, now is the time. Now is the time. Go get one. Do it. Just do it. Just do it. Who cares? Just do it.
And on behalf of Chad, I'm gonna throw in adopt responsibly. So let's keep that.
No, just do it. Hey, by the way, if you also haven't noticed, if you want one that's already saddle broke and ready to go, is Zeus and Thor, where they came from. They're having their auction. Now you have to go to Carson City to adopt them and take a trailer because you go and go home with one. They are also doing the adoption there. I'm trying to find the actual day. I think it's usually around February 20th, but the adoption, February 25th, Saturday, February 25th. There's the 14 saddle trained horses in one burrow. One little cute little female burrow is going out. So that's on Saturday, February 25th. I'll share that as well.
All right, good. Well, our guest is ready, and you've just been looking forward to this since you heard she was coming on.
I know. Well, I'm excited to talk about wieners and to not have it come from me. This is like a professional wiener cleaner here. Stephanie, good morning. How are you?
Is that on your business
good
card?
Morning.
Professional
I'm
wiener
well.
Cleaner? Is that
no.
on your card?
No, I love it. I love it. I will put that on my website, though. That's fantastic.
Stephanie, Jamie, you have to be quiet for a second because I have a request from many of the listeners have you heard the official sheath cleaning song sung by Jamie Jennings 6 years ago when our show first started? Because this is your theme song. Are you ready? Okay, here we go.
I am so ready.
How's it hanging? So much cleaner. Aren't you glad I washed your wiener? I admit it's kind of creepy that I had to stick my arm up in your peepee. It was sticky. It was gunky. It felt icky. It smelled funky. It was crusty. It was cruddy. When you stuck it out, it creaked like it was rusty. After half an hour of toiling and of squirting baby oiling, you're as fresh there as a daisy. Either this means I love you or else I'm crazy.
There you go.
You know, I gotta be honest, the more I listen to that, well, number one, the more I hate Glenn. But the more I listen to it, the more I realize I'm really talented. I am really talented.
We have a link to that on YouTube. I'll send it to you, Stephanie. You can have that as your theme song.
You're welcome.
I love it. I love it. It's beautifully sung.
Stephanie, so here's the deal. I sang that years ago, and Glenn, so I've become this like kind of like this sheath cleaning, even though I didn't want the title, like sheath cleaning expert. And I feel like I need to pass the baton on to you. So tell us about your business.
Well, it's actually quite interesting. It's something that I had to do back when I was 17 years old at a really big farm back when I was growing up. And one of the horse dropped down at the rail, and one of the ladies came over and she's like, "You got to clean that." And so that kind of started my journey. When I it happened over a year ago when I was with a group of horse people, and we were all sitting around telling stories. One of the girls was talking about how she helped a lady with her horse, and the lady didn't know that her horse had to be cleaned there. And, they found a bean that was this big, and, you know, it's just one of those horse stories. And I just started thinking at that time, I've been doing this as long as I've been around horses, and there are people that don't know that this should be done. There are people that don't know how to do it. There are people that don't want to do it, and I don't blame them. But I'm just like, you know what? It is an opportunity to help the horse, because horses do need this done. And so I created into a business, and I came up with the name of Stud Crud Busters, which I thought was just funny. And I do incorporate a lot of humor in the business, because I have a very dirty job, and it's a very interesting topic of conversation for a lot of people, especially a lot of non-horse people. So
they're interested. I didn't even think about that.
It's been very interesting. Yeah.
Were you ever featured with Mike Rowe? Has Mike Rowe ever been to visit your dirty job?
No, I wonder if I can contact him somehow.
I'm sure he'd love to come over and do that.
It's dirty. It's dirty and dangerous, because sometimes you get in the line of fire and you have to be really careful. And you know, if you have the wrong thickness of glove, or, you know, if the horse doesn't want to be done that day, it could be dirty and dangerous.
So Stephanie, what I wanted to do today was, obviously, you know, we're going to talk about your business, Stud Crud Busters. You're down in South Florida, near Daytona Beach, $30 a horse, no sedation is used. I don't know how you do that. But I wanted to have you, just because, let's make this an education, and don't be uncomfortable. I'll say it. You can say the word penis. It happens. You're a wiener cleaner. That's what you do. So
I wanted you to
just kind of quickly just go. We have about 5 minutes. I want you to take a 5 minute discussion on how to clean a sheath. If you could see that I'm talking with my hands right now, you'd be very disturbed. I'm sorry. I need to put those down. If you could talk,
this is not a TV show. Thank goodness.
Thank God. Yeah, I'm being arrested. So talk for a couple minutes on how to clean the sheath. So for those that aren't in Daytona and or don't know, are getting a lesson.
Well, the best things to start is to know that all horses, male horses and female horses, need to have this done. There is a buildup of debris, which is a mixture of dirt and urine, and it can lead to infections or urinary problems. Mares will get this. They may get mastitis, or they may get an infection in the udder. So they need to be cleaned also, which a lot of people don't understand, but then also the male horse. The dirt and debris will line up in the lining of the sheath, and it produces a secretion or of material which we call smegma, and it irritates the sheath and it causes urinary problems. So that has to be cleaned. It's one of those things that in Florida, it's a little bit of a warmer climate, so I recommend people to do this seasonally. You know, summer, spring, winter, and fall. And if it's something that you're not comfortable with, definitely ask a veterinarian to show you. Not all horses will drop. So sometimes people like to do this when the horse is under sedation after they get their teeth checked. But even just working with your horse and getting them to desensitize, you know, a little bit every day, see if you can touch them down in that area, get them used to it. Because male horses, from weanlings until the end of their life, they will need to have this done. You know, it's just a dirty job that they're not able to do themselves. So they do get a buildup of beans, which can cause infection and causes difficulty when they urinate.
What is a bean? Why do they get it? Tell everybody, what is a bean? Why do they get it? And where is it located? And if you don't want to say that, if you don't, go ahead.
I will say the word. The bean is a mixture of dirt, lead, mineral salts that cause from the urine, and it's just a clay-like ball of debris. It kind of forms into a little bit of a mass, and it forms in the urethral diverticulum, which is the opening around the penis. And it gets stuck in a little pocket there, and they start forming, and they just kind of will keep mashing and building up. It kind of feels like clay, but it becomes a mass material. So that material needs to be removed. I've had some horses that, probably one of my largest beans that I've cleaned out of a horse, it was from a really nice lady who just rescued this horse. She didn't know his background, but the bean was about 2.25 inches and about 3/4 inches thick. And
ew.
His name was Titan, and he thanked me afterward. Oof. It was really large. So you have to keep note that, you know, these will cause problems and you need to go in there and clean it out. Also, just from rolling around, just from sweat, from dirt, from a lot of different things, around the sheath will become dirty also. And you'll kind of see that crusty material that, you know, is scratchy and irritating to the male horse, and also the female horse, but the male horses get it in the sheath pocket. And so then that will need to go in and get cleaned out also.
The way that I explain it, Stephanie, is I like to say that, you know, there's the urethra, and then right above the urethra is a little cave. And it's a cave that is unexplored if it's a gelding. Okay. And so in this cave, it's like a pearl in an oyster. It just continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So you have to go in there and you have to explore the cave go in there and get the pearl out. And then they are happier and healthy. So that's how I like to explain
it to
children.
You should see Jamie's necklaces. They're wonderful looking.
Oh, gross. So that's gross.
You brought it up. It was just there. I had to take it.
Yeah.
That is what it's like. Yeah. And I've seen it even in weanlings and yearlings, and they will start to grow and develop also. So they'll start off really tiny, and it's important to remove them. And then as they get larger, obviously that's more of a problem. When your horse gets older, you need to have that checked a little bit more frequently, because that's just one of the problems that you want to eliminate, you know, of any difficulty that the horse would have for that. So young and old, mares and geldings and stallions need to be done.
What do you
use? Well, I've been coming up with my own product, because you don't want to use baby oil or baby lotions. You don't want anything that's oil-based. You don't want anything that's petroleum-based. I was using some of the products that were out there. They do have chemicals in them. So, you know, I consulted with my veterinarian, and I noticed that one of the products that I had to use on my horse, he got a burn. He got a chemical burn from using it. So I decided I didn't want to use chemicals with my horses. So I wanted to come up with something on my own that was going to be natural, organic, non-irritating as possibly as it could be, because it's just a very sensitive area for your horse. And I wanted to keep it as pain-free and non-irritating as I could. So the product that I use is a glycerin oil base. It has a little bit of a coconut oil, a tiny bit of tea tree oil, and neem. And I found that I have very good results with the horses that I use that product on. And they're very happy and very comfortable after. So just after a lot of research and a lot of trial and error with the different products out there, that's what I used. Some people say that using ivory soap is a good idea, but it's very gentle because you don't want to use any other stronger, harsher detergent. But you just have to realize that whatever product that you use, you have to be able to rinse that out thoroughly and get that product out so it doesn't continue to cause irritation with the horses. That also is what kind of led me to make my own product, that it is going to help the horse naturally clean himself and remove any extra debris that he has in there to where it's not going to irritate him if it's left in him still. So have to proceed with caution. Definitely do your research, ask your veterinarian. Some of the things that some people will tell you aren't always the best idea, and you don't want to put your horse in that situation that would cause him a problem.
Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for coming on to talk to us about it. Stephanie from Stud Crud Busters, you can find her on Facebook, and you also have a phone number. Can I give it out?
Of course.
It's 920.
It's 386.
Oh, wait, that's not this one, huh? 920.
Oh, that's my cell phone, but I also have the business phone. 920-664-2230 and 386-232-8022. I'm based out of Daytona, but I travel to Jacksonville. I travel down the coast to the beaches, Orlando, Ocala, and even sometimes down in the Tampa, St. Pete area. So I do get around Florida quite a bit to help horse owners and their horses.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. And we look forward to hearing some more adventures later on. Maybe we'll send you up to Glenn and Jennifer's place in Ocala.
I ain't doing it. So Scooter's on his own until you come out. So next time you're in Ocala, let us know.
You're not going to do what, Glenn?
I'm not cleaning any Winkies. So there you go. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Our next guest is coming right up. And the following Horse Health segment is brought to you by our newest sponsor. It's brought to you by the good folks over at ND Flax. Visit them at ndflaxmill.com. And I'm going to tell you after we have our guest on how you can get your horse's picture on one of their bags of flax that they're selling. That's a unique opportunity. But first, we have to talk about taking care of babies.
I'm so excited to talk to you about taking care of babies. Do we have the
yes,
sounder? Do we need
now? Go
okay,
ahead.
Go. Yep. All right. Well, I'd like to welcome Dr. Frazier back. Dr. Frazier, I had a baby.
Good morning. I know. How is your foal doing?
Oh my gosh, she is absolutely adorable. She is not a black colt. She is a chestnut filly.
Yeah.
And And she was born happy and healthy. We actually interviewed my veterinarian on here to talk about it. She just talked about what a wonderful job I did in controlling myself and my emotions and my excitement. And I pulled her out myself, and she came out. Everything was almost textbook. We couldn't quite get her to nurse at the beginning. Mare was in a little bit of pain, but after that, little Banamine, we're good to go. Happy, healthy baby. And so that's why we have you on, because now what's next? I don't know. I don't know what to do. That's
well,
where you come
I think you got through the tough thing. The foal is born and happy, healthy, and you got the foal to nurse. And that was going to be my first thing I said about newborn care, is how important it is to make sure that foal nurses and nurses in an appropriate time. We want to make sure that a newborn foal doesn't pick up any infection and get sick from that. And foals are born with absolutely no antibodies. They, unlike other species like people, the foal does not get any protective antibodies through the placenta from the mare. So basically, when that foal's born, the bugs are just waiting to attack it. That poor little foal has no, immune system ready to fight that off. So it's just super important that we get the colostrum in with good antibodies.
Thank you for saying that, Glenn, because hence the multiple panicked phone calls to my veterinarian, because I actually was not super calm. She said that a lot of times this is probably the fifth or sixth baby for this mare. And she said that, you know, she gets really sensitive over time, the more sensitive. So every time the foal would go to nurse, she would kind of swipe it away. And like I said, after some Banamine, she was nursing and latching just fine. I called it latching. I think that's a human term. But I was totally,
I call it that too.
Do you? Okay. I was totally panicked. I mean, I was totally panicked because of exactly what you said. They are born with nothing. Why are they born with nothing?
The different species have different types of placenta. So the type of placenta that a horse has, the layers do not allow those antibodies to cross from the mare or the mom to the baby. So that's why they are not born with any antibodies. Luckily, we have some options if the foal doesn't get any antibodies. As long as we realize that situation is happening and we correct it, then, you know, we have things we can do to deal with that. The first thing is, if you have a foal that isn't nursing, maybe the mare, like your case, but maybe more extreme, maybe the mare's sore, maybe the mare just doesn't like the foal and she won't let that foal nurse. Well, we can still get milk some of her colostrum from her and give it to the baby. So some people use bottles. You have to be very, very careful if you're using a bottle that the baby won't aspirate or get some milk colostrum down in their lungs. You can have your veterinarian pass a tube and just put it right in the stomach. That's what we do here at the clinic if we have this problem. So there are things we can do. Now, the foal only absorbs that colostrum or the antibodies from the colostrum, for about 18 to 24 hours. So that's why it's, time is of the essence with this, to get those antibodies in quickly. If the foal's older and didn't get enough antibodies, we can give some plasma. You can have your veterinarian put in an IV catheter and run a liter or 2 liters of plasma, and that can boost the level of antibody up so that your foal has protection against disease.
What percentage of foals don't latch at all?
Oh, I don't know if I could give you a number, and I'm a little skewed because when I work in the clinic here, we get all the ones that something went wrong.
Yeah. Let me rephrase the question.
She's like 100%.
Yeah. Everyone I see.
So 100% of what I see has a problem.
So let me rephrase the question. Is it a good percentage? Is it like, a very, very few? Does it happen?
The majority of the time, the foal is going to get up and nurse appropriately, and the mare is going to have good colostrum. Now, that's the other thing. Does the mare have colostrum? The foal might get up, the mare lets the foal nurse, everything looks great, but if the mare doesn't have good colostrum, then it's not going to be enough. Sometimes a mare just simply won't make colostrum. Sometimes they'll drip their colostrum ahead of time before they foal, and so the foal won't get enough antibodies. When you have a mare that's about to let her foal nurse, you want to just look at that colostrum. You can run a test. You can have your veterinarian run a test and make sure it's got antibodies, but you can look at it and you can get a really good idea just putting a few drops in your hand. It should be thick, yellow, and sticky. You know, it shouldn't look like milk. If you have a thin, white, milk-looking fluid, then you need to be worried that you've got enough antibodies in that fluid. But if it's really thick, sticky, you know, doesn't really look like milk, then you feel more confident that your foal is going to get enough antibodies from it.
Now, Dr. Fraser, of course, coming us from Haggard Equine Medical Institute, and I wanted to say I'm very now comfortable with what colostrum looks like because I bought the test milk strips to see plus or minus 12 hours when Pink was going to foal. And so I was, you know, you have to milk them. And let me tell you, that is a skill I did not have, is how to milk a mare. I'd never done that before.
There is an art to it. Yes.
Yes, there is. I had to call the vet again and I'm like, how do I get this out? It just would not come out, you know? So I had to learn how to do it. And then every day it would get a little more viscous. Like it started out as just white fluid, like clear fluid. And then by the time she's falling, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's sticky. It's yellow and it's sticky.
Yeah.
Colostrum. So that was kind of part of it. Like, I don't even think I needed to spend the money on these test strips. You just need to like milk them and look at it.
Well, I think that the test strips are great for giving you an idea of, you know, when you're within 24 hours, but certainly you'll start to see that change over to the colostrum. Some mares may not change that quickly. Some mares may, literally it looks like milk and they have the foal. And then in those first few hours, they start that shift over to colostrum.
Oh,
so you were lucky with your mare that you started seeing it in an appropriate way, but sometimes, we don't.
Listen, from
it's
definitely my experience,
important to...
go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say from my experience, my mare got pregnant the first try. Everything went totally clockwork and it was super easy. So I don't see what the problem is. Why is this so hard?
It's an easy. Yes. Yes. Well, and I'm so glad that it worked out for you that way. I'm guessing that you probably checked the IgG level on your foal after it was born. And I was just going to say the importance of checking we call it the IgG level. And basically IgG is a type of the antibody. So you can have your veterinarian pull a blood sample and there are several different tests. There's a little stall side test you can do. You can take it to a laboratory and they can determine that your foal did get an appropriate level of antibody from the colostrum.
Yes. So that was the vet came out to check her, you know, within 24 hours, I think. I think she wanted to wait 24 hours. And is that, like, I was like, she's born, come out. She's like, no, I need to come out tomorrow. I'm like, yeah, what are you doing? Get out here, make sure everything's okay. So, even though I did dip the navel repeatedly and I did all the stuff I was supposed to do, she still ended up with a little bit of a fever and a little bit of an infection, even with her clean straw and all this. But they're born with no antibodies. So we did have to do neck cell shots. She's like, it's just a minor thing, but just wanted to make sure we took care of everything. So she was getting neck cell shots like once a day for 5 days. And I thought she would hate me. The filly would hate me, but she doesn't. So she forgot all about it. Now, with that, why did she have to wait 24 hours to come out and see the baby? Is that when the levels on the IgG show up?
It is. It is. So we know they're born with no IgG. We know they have to get colostrum, and then they have to absorb that from their GI tract into their bloodstream. So it's going to take several hours. So if you check a foal at, you know, 2 or 3 hours, they're not going to have any IgG, and it's not going to tell you if you're in good shape or not. So I recommend waiting till the next day. And sometimes, you know, that may be 18 hours, 24, 36 hours. And that's when I recommend that people check. Now, if you are greater than 24 hours and the IgG level is low, then you're probably going to have your veterinarian give some plasma to bring that level up. And that's a little more complicated than just tubing with some colostrum, but still typically easily managed on the farm.
Yes, not super fun to do though, with the mare being a little protective and all that. So basically, that's just you have to hook a IV into her, right, and then run plasma.
Right. We put an IV catheter in and run a liter of plasma, and then your veterinarian would probably come back out the next day and or even 2 days later and recheck that level and make sure that it went up sufficiently.
Wonderful.
Some of the things that you want to look for. I was just going to say some of the things you'd want to look for, aside from having your veterinarian check the IgG, it's just that your foal has normal behavior, that the foal got up within a couple hours, the foal is consistently nursing from the mare, not laying around the stall, some foals will suffer a little bit of hypoxic damage when they're born, and sometimes they just look a little bit lost in the stall. That means that they maybe didn't get enough oxygen during the foaling process. So you want to make sure that your foal is appropriately nursing, not nursing the side of the stall, nursing the mare's front legs, just kind of, you know, aberrant behavior. You want to check temperatures if you're concerned. Make sure that the foal's not running a fever, as it sounds like your guy did. Those are just some of the things you can do as an owner to make sure that you don't have a problem that's coming.
Okay. I must say that being a part of it, I've never foaled before. I've never been a part of any baby being born except for mine. And I was really not a big part of that one anyway. So I was trying to Google, you know, and YouTube what birthing looks like. And I was watching the videos and I thought, oh my God, this is so gross. It's disgusting. This is gross. They have like all this fluid comes out and then I'm supposed to tie up the placenta and all that. You know, it was not that bad when it was like my mare and my baby. It was, I don't know, it was kind of cool. I really enjoyed it. So is that kind of where your passion stems, is the foals?
It is. I do all internal medicine and critical care, but certainly my passion would be the foals and the sick foals. Yes.
All right. Fantastic. Sorry, I have a sick 3-year-old in here. Now that she's a couple weeks out, what are we looking at for the future? I'm assuming there's deworming and vaccinations and certain things that we have to do and put on our list.
It is. Luckily, you're still not quite up to the vaccine time. At a couple months of age is when the maternal antibodies start to drop. So as the antibodies that the foal got from the colostrum, as they start to decline, then the foal's own immune system will kick in and start producing its own antibodies. And you know, your veterinarian, depending on your location and your area, probably has a vaccine plan, you know, tailored to your foal to start getting those vaccines in.
Fantastic. Okay, so vaccines, and then am I just supposed to look at her and squishy and kiss her on the nose? I mean, like, when can I start like teaching her to lead and all that? I mean, she's already picking her feet up. I've been working on that, but like, when is her like neck okay to, I don't know, start teaching pressure and release and all those kinds of things? When do I get to train her?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it depends. Certainly you'll get different opinions. There's no right or wrong answer on that. In my opinion, it's never too early as long as you're careful. And certainly I hate to see somebody get in a tug of war fight with any horse, much less a foal. So I always advocate putting halters on early so they get used to it. But you don't necessarily want to use that halter for a restraining device on a young foal, because as you said, that neck's not very strong. You know, you don't want to start that tug of war fight, but I think it's good to start getting them used to it. I think that, again, it depends on the personality of the person and the horse. And as long as you're cautious and patient, then I think that's a very good idea.
What I just heard, Glenn, was that's a green light. That's a green light right
there.
That's
not what I heard. Is that? We heard a different thing there.
Saddle training. Well,
certainly with my own personal foals, I was in there pretty early doing all of those things, but I also knew that I wasn't going to, go too crazy either.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Fraser, as always, it is just awesome. You forgot more about horses than any of us will ever know. So we do appreciate you coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. You guys can find Dr. Fraser at, of course, Haggard's Institute in Lexington. We're going to be there for Rolex. We're going to come over and say hi.
Oh, I will look forward to meeting you then.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Fraser.
Thank you very much.
She's running. She's not going to be there. She's going to hide.
She's like, I'm gone. I'm sorry. I was out of town.
Tell him I'm not here. They're crazy. I don't want to talk to them. Haggard.com. Thank you so much, Dr. Fraser.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, she's not going to be there.
Play the ad. Play the ad.
You know, this segment is sponsored by ND Flax, the family-owned business, been doing business for generations. ND Flax, which stands for North Dakota Flax, is an FDA-inspected mill, certified organic, non-GMO whole flax seed. It's milled at room temperature, then packaged and stored at room temperature away from any heat or light sources. This proprietary milling process keeps the omega-3s intact so your horse can benefit from all of the flax's natural nutrients, yet is convenient for busy horse owners like us, and the shelf life is up to 2 years, which is incredible.
No, it's crazy.
Yeah, I know. That was one of the things we were most surprised at, because, you know, when I buy flax, I always think, wow, that I got to use it the next month, right?
You grind it and you feed it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, no more of that. No more coffee grinder, no more daily battles doing that. You can just get it already done. Visit ND Flax online at ndflaxmill.com to purchase or learn more. Plus, remember last week when they were on, they talked about the contest they were going to have to get your horse on their new label for one of their flax products. Well, we have the link now. It's now live where you can send a picture of your horse. I'm now looking for, actually, while you were talking about babies, I was looking for a picture of Scooter to submit. Because if I submit Scooter's picture, you guys aren't going to win. I'm just going to win. So
there's an Instagram select photo thing too. Okay.
Yeah. Can I please say also that you're not allowed to submit a picture of your baby, because then Scooter won't win. So no baby pictures from Jamie. You're not allowed. No.
Am I allowed to be in it? Like, can it be me and the baby? Because I have a really cute one of me kissing her nose.
I don't think they care. I don't think they care, just as long as it's, you know, a lovely picture of your horse and you, if you want. Send it over to, well, the link is so long, I can't really tell you what it is, but we just posted it on our Facebook page. I posted it on the Auditor page. I posted it on the Horse Radio Network Facebook page as well. So go to that link, submit your entry today. Not only will you get you have a chance of getting your horse's photo on the new label, you get free cold mill flaxseed for 6 months. So it's worth entering, and we want to see, this is the challenge, we want to see one of our listeners win this contest, and we want to see one of our listeners on the bag. So definitely head on over to do it, and we'll be so proud. We'll have you on the show if you win this contest, and we'll talk about your pony. So but just keep in mind that my pony Scooter is going to win. Just wanted to mention that. All right.
Dream on, baby.
ndflaxmill.com.
Not letting your weird little Hackney win this thing.
Your leggy little baby. I mean,
little awesomeness. I think it's still, I think it needs to be a Mustang. So we'll see.
Well, oh, you know, it could be a Mustang. You have a few of those to enter. And it doesn't say you can only enter one, as far as I saw. So just enter a whole bunch.
And I'm pretty sure right now that number 3708 from Burns, Oregon could also be on the cover, and I could win with the Mustang I'm going to adopt online today. Ooh, 3749.
All right, let's hear from our friends at Haggard, and then we're our song, and we're coming back to talk about tractors and tools and making hay, which we haven't talked about in a long time on the show. So we'll be right back.
Haggard Equine Medical Institute in Lexington, Kentucky and Wellington, Florida has been treating racehorses, sport horses, and beloved pasture ornaments for 140 years. With some 30 ambulatory doctors, 24-hour emergency care, full surgical suite, dedicated sport horse facility, wide range of proven therapies, and full-service pharmacy, Haggard offers everything your horse needs for the proper diagnosis and best treatment. Visit Haggard.com for more information, or you can call them at 859-255-8741. Follow Hagyard Equine Medical Institute on Facebook or on Twitter at Hagyard and receive health alerts and the latest information on keeping your horse healthy and happy.
Well, that's Katie Drake, the lovely Katie Drake. You can find all of her songs at katiedrakesongs.com. And she has a bunch more that I'm going to be adding into the lineup here, too. So, and we chatted with her a little while back, and she was absolutely lovely. So we'll hope to have her back again soon. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I'm Glenda Geek here with Jamie Jennings, and Coach Jen is in the producer chair. We're glad that you are here. Brought to you today by EquestrianCollections.com for the whole universe of equestrian shopping at your fingertips. Go to EquestrianCollections.com. Well, our next guest, and we haven't talked too much about this, and I read a couple articles recently about hay and about horse people and hay and about how more and more people are starting to do and make their own hay because there is equipment now. Used to be you needed the big equipment with the big tractors to make hay, and that's not true anymore. And there's a company called Tractor Tools Direct, and Pat is part of that company, and they sell equipment that you can make hay with smaller tractors. So good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning.
You know, I have been reading articles about making hay. And, you know, I think that with the organic movement and with everything going on now, have you found more and more, not only horse owners, but farm, you know, small farmers in general wanting to make their own hay?
Most definitely. And we're finding more people that want to have better control over the quality of the hay that they're feeding to their animals. And that, you know, doing it yourself is key to assuring good quality.
Pat, I got a story to tell you, and then I want to ask you a little bit about tractor tools, but I have to tell this story because we were talking about it before the show. On Monday, I'm a horse husband. I cannot be trusted to go buy the hay. So I go to the reputable hay store, and I just say, I think it was Timothy I was buying, I want 4 bales of the Timothy. They put it in the back truck. I bring it home. First thing, of course, my wife does is goes out and says, this hay is crap. And she finds dust in it, and then immediately she pulls out this great big, like, 3-inch by 3-inch rock from it. Well, she is absolutely livid, drives back to the hay store, lets them have it, and as they were taking the hay back off the truck with the forklift thingy, the bottom bale just disintegrated into a pile of mush. And, you know, she proceeded to let them have it, and I think this is the things that we're going through as horse owners that is the reason that people are wanting to bale their own hay now.
No question. You know, people are learning that a bale of hay is not a bale of hay is a bale of hay. I mean, there's
a
vast difference. Yes.
Yeah.
And so I learned, you know, from, first of all, just selling hay to mostly horse customers that, you know, it ran the gamut from people that wouldn't know a good bale from a bad bale to people that were extremely particular and wanted to know exactly what was in the bale. But, you know, in the end, the best hay is about baling it at the right time. And that's something that most small farms don't have much control over on their own property if they don't have their own equipment.
Right. And we used to have to rely on, we had 100 acres, and we used to have to rely on the neighbors to bale the hay. And that was in the back in the day before equipment like yours we're going to talk about even existed. It was all the big equipment. And they would, of course, do ours last. So the quality we ended up with hay-wise wasn't as good as the quality of the farm of their farm that they were making their hay on, because they always did theirs at the prime time and got to us when they could. So you're exactly right about that.
We hear that story literally every day when we talk to customers.
Well, now, let's talk a little bit first about the company. What is Tractor Tools Direct?
Tractor Tools Direct is a company that specializes in small tractors and implements for small tractors. We specialize in hay equipment. The company was founded by me originally back in 2009. I grew up a suburbanite, but I married a farm girl. We moved to the family farm, and when her father became ill, I became the guy in charge of taking care of the farm. And as necessity, I guess, caused me to learn, hey, how does this making hay thing work? And I guess the rest is history, that I found that I wanted smaller equipment, and it was not really available in the U.S. at all. And I started to search and found that in Italy, they're making this smaller sized equipment that is really well made, but is just designed around smaller machinery. It was a perfect fit for us. Then I thought, you know what, I bet I'm not the only guy thinking about this. So we gave it a try, and it's just grown every year since. Until now, you know, we've become a pretty good-sized company that's sending this equipment all over the United States.
Well, let's talk about the process of making hay. And then, you know, it used to be that you needed a very large tractor. I mean, we had an old Oliver 770, which could pull equipment, but the equipment was always so large, and you needed a tractor with a lot of torque. So now you've got three things to make hay. You have to cut it with some kind of cutting device, then you have to rake it with some kind of raking device, and then you have to bale it with some kind of baling device. So there's really those three things. Am I right on that?
True.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, you have come up with the products. Let's talk about each of those things. So to cut it, typically you can use a bush hog, right? Or is there a special cutter to cut the hay?
There are a few special types of cutters. A bush hog can work, but it's not going to do a very good job. And the reason is a bush hog will chop the forage up into bits, and you don't want that. You want to just cut at the base of the plant and leave the whole length of the plant intact. It doesn't bale very well if it's all chopped up. It can still make a quality product, but it's really hard to get it out of the field at that point.
So what are the cutters called?
There are three.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's three major types. For smaller tractors, they're going to connect to the tractor's three-point hitch. You're either going to have a sickle bar type cutter, which is the type that most people are most familiar with, which is like barber's clippers sticking out from the side of your tractor. Then you've got disc mowers, which is sort of the evolution of the sickle bar mower, where you've got a bunch of small discs with blades that are on that cutter bar instead of little clipper blades, and they spin and cut the hay that way. And then you've got what's called a drum mower, which is two larger discs that are suspended from a gearbox and cut the hay, and the hay shoots through between the shafts of those discs as it's cut. Those are the three major types. Most of our small farm customers will use the third type, a drum mower, because it's the simplest, easiest to take care of, easiest to maintain, most durable, and usually least expensive.
Is it the safest, too?
There is no hay mower that's safe.
Okay.
I mean, if you don't use it properly. Okay, right. So I want to say that.
Please.
The sickle bar
use
mower sickle bar mowers have the advantage that those blades are never moving fast enough to eject a rock at high speed. So if I were to say which one is the safest, the sickle bar mower is the safest. Anytime you get into a rotary mower, if you don't use it right and the blades are contacting the ground or you're in a rocky area, there's the potential for it to throw rocks. So we always recommend people, first of all, always wear safety glasses or be in a cab tractor. Second of all, don't have anybody nearby when you're cutting hay.
Don't have the kids tagging along behind, is what you're saying.
Definitely not.
All right, so now we have to rake it.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we use for that?
There are myriad types of rakes. Some require a big tractor, but not all. So you have the very budget-conscious rake is called a wheel rake, and it's basically four pinwheel-looking things, or it can be more or less, but the standard type is with four, that you drag along the ground, basically, and they just sort of rake the hay over and over from one wheel to the next and leave a windrow behind the tractor. So that's a very economical rake, but it's hard to use, and it tends to rope the windrow, which means that it's kind of in a tight bundle, and it doesn't dry very well that way. So that rake has its drawbacks. Then you go to a rotary-style rake, which is powered by the tractor's PTO and spins with its axis parallel to the ground, so it's got all these tines that are raking in a circle and leaving the hay over to the left of the tractor. And then the third kind, which is the kind we sell the most of, is called a belt rake. And that type of rake is also PTO driven, but it's much more compact than the rotary rake. And they make them in sizes from 4 feet to 10 feet. So you can pick one for any size tractor. Easy to use, and they make a nice fluffy windrow, which means you can rake a day sooner and allow the hay to finish drying in the windrow. So it helps you to manage your workload. You know, you mow one day, you rake the next day, and then it dries another day, and you bale the following day.
All right. And then the final step, the baler. And balers were always these big machines, whether kickback balers or, you know, all the different kinds of balers there's been through the years. And what can you use, though, with the smaller tractors?
With, you know, the products that we sell can be run on tractors under 30 horse, sometimes under 20 horse that will bale hay. But there's really two options for smaller tractors, either a square baler, and you have to look for a brand that specifically will work on a small tractor, or a mini round baler. Most people have never heard of a mini round baler.
They have seen
the big round bales. Right. You've seen the big round bales out in the field. They're 5 feet tall. They weigh 1,000 pounds. And they're really hard for a small farm with a small tractor to manage. And you end up wasting a lot of hay. The mini round balers are designed like the big round balers, but they make a bale that's about the size of a square bale.
Oh, but it's just round.
So that bale's going to weigh, it's just round. It's sort of a paper towel roll shape. And it's going to be somewhere between 40 and 55 pounds for most situations. So it's easy to handle by hand. It's easy to feed out in smaller quantities and to meter out, especially if that's something you're really keeping track of for your horses, than a big round bale would be. And the small round bales also are more weather resistant than a square bale. So if you don't have a lot of help to get the hay out of the field, they can sit in the field for a few days while you collect them. Whereas when you square bale, you must collect the bales the same day that you bale, because even dew on those bales will soak into the bale and will start to degrade the hay.
So these are more compact or packed tighter?
It's because of the way it rolls the hay in the chamber, you get what's sort of like a thatched roof outer surface of the bale.
Huh.
And then it's wrapped in a netting, or they make balers that wrap in twine and also in netting. So if you get the netting, you're getting this outside surface that sheds water. And it can even sit for a whole season outside, and only the outer inch of the hay will be affected.
Huh. I didn't know that. So now, does it come out in the round bales like that? Does it end up, because in the big round bales, you don't really have flakes of hay. And I know a lot of people I've witnessed right. where they put the big round bale in the barn and they'll pull off chunks, but it doesn't come out in a flake like the square bales. Does this come out in a flake, or is it kind of loose right. when you open it up?
It's not a flake. Think of it again more like a roll of paper towels, and that's the way that it comes off of the bale. We get the question a lot about, well, I'm used to feeding flakes. How do I feed this the same way? And the first thing we say to people is, first of all, feeding by flake is not a reliable way to feed your animals. Because, you know, we also sell square balers. But the size of that flake depends on how big the windrow was, how fast the operator was driving, what type of baler was being used, how big the bale chamber is. And so flakes can range from, you know, a pound of hay to 4 or 5 pounds of hay in a single flake. So that's not a reliable way to feed. Anyway, it is a convenient way to feed, though. So
hence
we understand
the frustration
that.
Feeding hay.
That's right.
So frustrating.
Yeah, right. And as you probably know, a first cutting hay is going to have much bigger flakes than a second or third cutting hay, because there was more hay in the field, which meant when they raked it, the windrows were really big, which meant when they baled it, they were, with each plunger stroke of the baler, they were packing a bigger flake of hay.
I always wondered about that. Now I know why.
Yeah.
Huh.
Right. So that's the main reason that, you know, you get first cutting hay a bale is going to be totally different than a second and third cutting hay bale.
Well, now, okay.
But when it comes to the mini round bales, it's just a matter of you cut off the netting or the twine, and you can literally unroll it, you know, like you were
like a paper towel,
like you're unrolling a tarp on the floor or a paper towel. Yeah. So you can roll and sort of tear off the amount that you need. And you know, if you really need to meter out, you're going to know that bale. You're going to know it's a 40 to 55 pound bale, and you're going to know that, you know, your animal. If you got two or three animals, that might be one bale a day, you know, or whatever. I mean, every situation's different, but I would say it's still much, much easier to meter than a big round bale. And with practice is as good as a square bale.
Now, does it matter the kind of hay, or, you know, does that matter as to how farmers will bale the hay, depending on whether it's alfalfa or timothy or, you know, broom grass, whatever, or doesn't matter?
Well, different types of hay just grow differently. So timothy, fescue, a lot of the cool season grasses do almost all their growing before the middle of June. So, I'm in the Midwest. Here in the Midwest, we have mixed fields that have fescue, bluegrass, clover, and alfalfa. Okay, And our first cutting will be almost all fescue and bluegrass. Our second cutting will have a lot more alfalfa in it. And our third cutting might have more alfalfa and clover than grass at all. You know, as it turns out, those later balings are actually better. You know, higher protein hay for some of our customers, but of course a lot of horse customers need just a grass hay. They don't want a lot of legumes in there. So, you know, as far as what you're going to get, the season is going to determine a lot of what's in the bale.
Got it. I was just looking at your website too. By the way, from one fellow horse husband who married into this to another, you've certainly made a business out of it and understand it very well.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm still learning all the time, but I've enjoyed the learning process, and I love the move to the country. It was very good for our family.
You did a very good job on your website, which, by the way, is tractortoolsdirect.com, of explaining the different sizes of tractors. You have charts in there, and I don't want to go into that today, but you have charts in there. So if somebody has a tractor already and they want to look and see what size they have, you know, and what kind of implements they can use with that size, because that is one of the key things here is you don't want to be underpowered for any of the equipment you use, and you don't need to necessarily be too overpowered either. So I assume that they can call you and say, okay, I have this tractor. Can I use this implement that I'm looking at on your website? That's probably the best, safest way to do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, part of what we do is consulting. And people call, and the first question we ask is, what is your tractor? We look up the tractor, we get the horsepower rating and the weight, which is also an important factor. And from there, we tell them, here are your options. And then we talk about how many acres they're doing. We talk about what the terrain is like. We talk about what animals they're feeding. And from there, usually we can narrow down to their best options, but the tractor is the number one factor. And you know, most of our customers have a tractor that's under 30 horsepower.
Right, and I would say that. Not too many people have the really, really big ones anymore for their small family farms. And I say small family farms, meaning even 100 acres or less, you would consider a small family farm. Well, this has been very interesting, and I was geeking out today watching all the videos. You have a bunch of videos on the website because I'm a guy and I like geeking out on this stuff. And having done all of this in the past with our small 100-acre farm, and now Jamie's going to be going, and she's getting a farm in Oklahoma where, you know, going from Arizona, where pretty much the only grass you have is if you irrigate, now going to Oklahoma, where she's going to have to deal with this kind of thing. It's interesting to note, too.
I can't wait. I want to have.
yes. You need to add it to your list. Now, if you get less horses, Jamie, you can afford more equipment. I need to be telling Chad that. I'm sorry. I'll talk to him about it.
Yes, but then I don't need equipment if I get more horses.
So, see, this is the problem we have as horse husbands right there. So, Pat, will you ship to other parts of the country, or are you only you're in Indiana, right? Will you only be doing Indiana, or how's that work?
We actually have shipped to every state in the continental U.S., with the exception of North Dakota. I don't think we've ever sold a baler in North Dakota.
Because it's all snow there all the time.
Yeah, do you have snow balers? Make little nice round bales? Well, this is great.
But most of our customers are not near us at all. I mean, we ship as far as California and Maine and Florida. And we have a flat shipping rate, so it doesn't cost more for people from further away to have it shipped to them.
Terrific. Find out more. Head over to tractortoolsdirect.com. Thank you for coming on. It's something we haven't talked about in a long time, and I really appreciate you being here. Hold on. Jennifer's going to chat with you for a second off air. We appreciate you stopping by. Thanks, Pat.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, that's tractortoolsdirect.com. That was interesting. You know, I knew the process of making hay because I've helped make hay in the past, but I never knew the intricacies of it. And as we talked about earlier, there are a lot of people that aren't doing it right. You have the same problem you said in Arizona, too.
It's so frustrating because here, as you were saying, like if somebody cuts hay in Kentucky, they cut the grass and the grass sits on top of the already
pretty grass,
heavily established.
Yeah.
On top of the heavily established grass. Well, here, I was buying from a local farmer who was planting empty lots. Like 5-6 acre farm fields that haven't been used in a long time. So he's growing the grass, and the grass is grown real tall, and he cuts it, and it's great hay, except for the fact when they go to bale it, he scoops, you know, they scoop it up and line it in rows. Well, it's on top of dirt. So then I was getting hay. I got one load of hay that had so much dirt in it. I was having to and of course I buy in like 68 bales and they're 100-pound bales. So I can't like return it. So they brings it over, drops it off, and I cut it open. There's just so much dirt in it because it's not gathered on top of grass. It's gathered on top of dirt. And that's the problem with some of the fields in Arizona is there's not a lot of option of, you know, scooping it up on the grass. So I've now had to go to a place that I pay a lot more for the hay, but they're established field. They've been doing it in this area for like 100 years. And there's like fourth generation hay growers. But again, it costs more. But like I've told Chad, I'm like, God, we may pay $2 more a bale, but that's still going to be less than a colic surgery. You know,
well, and my argument for the interlith is the other problem we have is they just won't eat it. So if I'm paying $2 less a bale on something that's just going to waste, why bother?
Yeah,
you know, exactly. They're just not eating it. And, you know, Scooter's the pickiest of pickies. And really? He, you know, he looks at it and goes, I'm not eating that. And he just doesn't. He'd rather starve than eat hay he considers below his level. And, you know, sometimes you look at it. And the other thing that's deceiving is, you know, some of the hay dealers around here will open a bale, but that doesn't guarantee that what's in the front of the truck is the same as what's in the back of the truck. You know, so of course they're going to pick the nice bale to open, just like when you go to the farmer's market and they're cutting a watermelon open for you and you buy a watermelon, think it's going to look like that. It doesn't always look like that. So it's the same here too. There's no good way unless you opened almost every bale you bought.
Yeah, it's pretty frustrating for sure. Well, you know, one hay guy here, I was going to tell you this too. He's like, the hay grower, I said, how can you tell if you're buying a good bale? And I think this was in Georgia. I asked this guy and he's like, I'll tell you how to do it. What you do right here is you grab them strings and you pull them up. And if his strings are real tight, that's a good bale of hay. And I was like, I don't think so.
That could also be the moldy bale inside. You know, you never know.
Yeah, it could be inside. You just never know. You know, and every once in a while, we'll get like a really heavy bale. And Chad's like, this one's got to be, because they're kind of compressed here. And this one's got to be moldy. It's so heavy. It's got to be wet. And I open it up. It's just like super packed hay. Or like 2 days ago, there was a giant stick in the whole bale. You know, like, how does that not break a baler? I don't know. But
do you remember
like
the
stick
one time years ago when we posted the question of the day was, what have you found in your bales of hay? And it was all these dead animals. And there were like 100 comments of things people have found in bales of hay.
I just found a crushed can.
There you go. Well, they have to drink while they're baling, and you know,
let's throw it out in the field. It'll be fine. It's going to happen.
It is true. It is very frustrating. I will not do after Monday's. You know, Jennifer's pretty even keeled, right? I mean, how long have we been doing these shows? So Jennifer just doesn't get mad about much, but I got home and I felt really bad because, you know, she said, you know, if I'm heading to town and we need hay, she'll just tell me to stop and get it. And usually this dealer's really good. And that's the only place I'll go because it's usually pretty good. And I got home and it was like, and she had a hissy fit. She was just not mad at me, but mad at them. And I'm like, okay, that's it. This horse husband's out. I'm never buying hay again.
So, and I'm done.
That's it. I'm serious, too. I'm never buying hay again. She has to go get the hay. She's like a hay whisperer. She can look at the hay. We used to buy, years ago, we had a big farm with 20-some horses. We, in Pennsylvania, they had hay auctions. And they would show up with the truckloads of hay, right? The whole tractor-trailer truckload or the straight truckload of hay. So you're buying hundreds of bales at a time. And at the auction, she used to walk around and go, nope, 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 yep, this one's good. Nope, 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 this one's good. And very seldom were we ever ripped off when Jennifer was picking the hay, and we were taking a risk. We were buying a whole tractor trailer truckload. So, you know, she's the hay whisperer. I admire her for that. And I don't have to do that job anymore because I'm never doing it again. After Monday.
You're done.
I'm out. No, thank you. We have to hear from our good friends at the Fairfield Inn, and then we're going to chat a little bit more about what's going on in Horse Radio Network in just a minute. Fairfield Inn and Suites North by Marriott Lexington is the ideal hotel for you, as they are the closest hotel to the Kentucky Horse Park. They have the most spacious guest rooms and suites in the area, and they're only 4 miles from downtown Lexington. Fairfield Inn and Suites North offers complimentary breakfast, free Wi-Fi throughout the hotel, free parking, a business center, an indoor swimming pool and jacuzzi, an outdoor patio with grill, laundry facilities, and much more. You get hungry, Cracker Barrel is located right next door, and there are 4 other dining options available within walking distance for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Of course, Lexington is known for the Kentucky Horse Park, University of Kentucky, Keeneland, and the historical Kentucky Bourbon Trail. Enjoy a terrific hotel experience while you're touring Lexington. There's no denying that the Lexington North Fairfield Inn & Suites is the best value in town and will meet all your hospitality needs. Just Google Fairfield Inn North Lexington and make your reservations today. Well, we'll be back tomorrow. Is Mary Kitzmiller. We'll be here answering questions and talking about training. Also, I wanted to mention real quick that Stephanie, one of our auditors, has started a Facebook page called HRN at Rolex, and I assume she started that. So everybody that is our listeners, go into Rolex so we can plan meetups and things. If you head on over to Facebook, if you're going and put HRN at Rolex, you'll find it. You can join the page, and that's where we'll communicate a lot of the information about meetups at Rolex. That's it. Thank you so much, Jamie, and we'll see you back on Friday. Get your really bad ads in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com.
I just want to tell you that I realize that at some point in the middle of the summer, I'm going to have to drive up through Colorado to deliver Pink back to her home once I get her weaned. And I've realized that Cannon City, which is a Mustang holding facility, an adoption facility, is actually on the way to where Pink lives.
We went to Cannon City on vacation last year.
Did you? Well, I mean, is it so beautiful?
It's beautiful.
Okay. I think we'll head to Pueblo, then go west over to Canyon City, and then get a Mustang, and then head up CP.
I have an excuse for you if your husband happens to be along. There is a great train ride in Cannon City. So just tell him that you're going to take the train ride.
Lucas will love it. See, yes. Family vacation, and we're going to have the trailer with us.
Just don't mention that side trip. Just go on the train ride, and oh, dear, I just noticed.
I feel like little baby Zara is going to need like a little baby friend, and so I'm going to need to adopt like a yearling.
This is how it happens. And before you get in any deeper, bye, everybody.
Spay, neuter, gals. Go adopt a Mustang. BLM.gov/adopt-a-horse.
Better move to Oklahoma soon.
Paul's Valley is right down the street. Worse.